The Book Club at 91.7 on WVXU and WMUB. Good morning. I'm Mark Purcell. On the phone with me is Sophie Egan, who is the author of the new book, Devoured, From Chicken Wings to Kale Smoothies, How What We Eat Defines Who We Are. Sophie, welcome to the Book Club at 91.7.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
I was really fascinated with this book, and I have to, I'll tell you right off, Sophie, that I every time I eat now, you've got me thinking about things, because there are, you cover...
I'm in your head.
Yes, you are in my head. But you cover so much in Devoured, and do mention in the acknowledgments that you had the idea to write about food in America and told a college advisor. What did you know then that led to Devoured today?
So this book has been a long time in the making. During college, I studied abroad in Bologna, which is considered the stomach of Italy. One of the best courses I took there was actually on the cultural history of food. And it was the first time I had ever heard the term food culture. And it really stuck with me. And so that mention in acknowledgement to my college advisor was that when I came back to the U.S., I really couldn't get this idea out of my mind of how would we define American food culture? And what does that mean to have a collective national psyche about food? So I really set out to explore the phenomena that together make up our national eating culture.
You begin with the American food psyche, which, as I said, a lot of what you say in the book has me thinking as I plan meals or even as I'm chewing my food. But you talk about how the American food psyche is driven a lot by our workplace ethic.
Absolutely. And throughout my research, three main patterns emerged about what's driving our food choices, because I really wanted to take a step back and help us gain this bird's eye perspective on ourselves. So not just what are we eating and what should we eat and, you know, eat this, not that, and all the different dietary advice you get, but what is the root cause? What is really leading us to look at food in the ways that we do? And work emerged as one of the most powerful forces. And what I mean by that is a couple of things. We spend more time working than we used to, about 200 hours more per year, each person, compared with about 1970. And while we've always been known throughout the globe for our work ethic, and it's something we unquestionably should be proud of, now we're outworking even ourselves. And what that means is those hours had to go somewhere, and there just isn't a lot of time left in the day to focus on food. And it also is a cultural... It isn't of much cultural importance to focus on food. Food is more considered sort of fuel, you know, something to energize you and get you through the day to focus on the things that truly matter. So also a result of this is that we've brought food into the workplace. Certainly many of us have probably been victim of sad desk lunch. Yes. And many of us have probably been victim to sad desk breakfast.
I did this morning, as a matter of fact, yes. So, okay.
You know, the crumbs spewing on the keyboard. Maybe you've got a few coffee stains. You know, you're maybe using your mouse with one hand while you kind of eat your Hot Pocket with your other hand or whatever your item of choice. But it's clearly not a very mindful way of eating. It gives us this false sense of, oh, I'm still being productive. Because in the workplace, productivity reigns supreme. And you want to at least appear to your colleagues that you're, you know, contributing value to the company. And we have, in general, a productivity orientation as a country. And this is one of the most fascinating things I learned about in the course of my research, where we look at even leisure as, you know, we have to have a lot to show for our time. So people will actually report choosing a less pleasant vacation experience, like an ice hotel, because it versus, say, a nice, you know, warm beach vacation, because it would feel like, you know, you're living sort of a more full life and you have kind of this experiential resume that you're checking things off on or adding to, and depends which metaphor you prefer. You know, bucket list is another one. But in terms of the workplace, it's the death of the American lunch break. And breaks actually really boost your productivity. They contribute to happiness, which is important for obviously lots of reasons, and also in turn boosts productivity. And I'm very fascinated by some of the ways that people are trying to reclaim the importance of food during the hectic work week. So, for example, there's an organization that put out a not sad desk lunch campaign. I don't know if you saw this a couple of months ago. And it was great. It brought on social media all of these examples from people, like a lunch bunch, where you grab four coworkers so that all together you're five, and you rotate cooking lunch for each other throughout the week. So you only have to actually make the meal once a week, but that means you get a real fresh homemade meal, you know, made with love each day, as opposed to, you know, hitting the vending machine or, you know, eating a Kind bar or your trail mix at your desk. So there's some interesting innovations happening in response to this bizarre phenomenon.
Sophie Egan, her book is Devoured, From Chicken Wings to Kale Smoothies, How What We Eat Defines Who We Are. A fascinating look at how, what, and why Americans eat. You can learn more about it at WVXU.org. And, well, you mentioned the Kind bar there, Sophie, and you talk a lot about snacking and how snacks have actually increased in our caloric intake that, I can't remember since when, but up over 100%.
Yes, and so throughout the past, I would say, generation or so, snacking has changed dramatically. It's arguably the biggest difference compared with kind of, you know, 30 years ago, where snack used to be a treat. It used to be something, you know, occasional. And now snacking, most Americans, the vast majority of us, snack 2 to 3 times a day. Some people are eating as frequently as every 2 hours. And wow, it's become not only socially acceptable, but socially normal to eat basically anywhere, anytime. I mean, one of the most bizarre examples of this to me was that I've seen people, you know, in the shoe store with like one hand submerged in a bag of snap pea crisps. It's like, you can now, it's not just at the workplace, which certainly happens.
It's at somebody else's workplace.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, you're getting it all over their brand new shoes. But it's this fear we seem to have, and it's very much appears to be in response, fear of crashing, you know, of running out of energy. And it's very much in response, it seems, to years of eating refined carbohydrates, which, of course, was in response to the low-fat craze. So now people are loading up on protein. So it's, you know, protein Cheerios and protein-packed, I mentioned Kind bars. You know, we see women stashing beef jerky in their purses just in case. You know, it's this real kind of, in athlete lingo, it's called bonking, where you just, you know, hit a wall. And so people are so concerned about that. And as anyone who's sort of had the sugar crash has experienced, there's good reason there. However, we've taken it to an extreme level, not just with the frequency that we're eating, in which, you know, we're mostly eating these snacks in addition to meals, even though we might like to tell ourselves that we're eating them instead, but also just with the protein. It's totally overkill, and in reality, almost no one in the U.S. fails to get enough protein.
And the selection that we have of these snacks is also overwhelming. You talk about McDonald's having 107 items on its menu, though I think they're beginning to pare that down. And that's something Americans come to expect, the diversity in the supermarket. What the average American supermarket has 42,214 items to choose from?
Yes, absolutely. We have certainly demanded this in the supermarket context. It's called mass customization, which kind of sounds oxymoronic, right? But it's this idea that, you know, you look at yogurt, just as an example. There are, what, dozens of kinds of yogurt in your average grocery store? It's this sense that each person should be able to have exactly what they, you know, their favorite type of any given product. So whereas before, and there are some great examples in Michael Moss's book of this as well, his book is Salt, Sugar, Fat, where, you know, Folgers used to have like one kind of coffee, and it was considered the kind of perfect recipe that everyone would love. And over time, it changed to say, oh no, different people have different preferences. And so over time, our needs have been met with this greater variety, and we can kind of customize, oh, I prefer, you know, creamy peanut butter versus crunchy. So it's not just flavors, but textures. However, it leaves us feeling paralyzed. And Barry Schwartz, a psychologist who has written on paradox voice, many of us with that McDonald's menu have stood there sort of like, oh, gosh, should I just throw a dart at the thing and someone pick for me, you know? Whereas it used to be a place for just a couple of choices, you know, burgers and shakes. We seem to have reached our limit in some ways, and there's kind of a backlash where some restaurants, as you mentioned, McDonald's is one of them too, they are starting to pare down the menus. Or you see restaurants where it's, you know, the chef's tasting menu, and people kind of like this idea that they don't have to choose. They can go into the restaurant and it's whatever the chef says is for dinner is what you're having, and that can be kind of liberating, right? It is interesting. The example where this is not changing, though, is fast casual. And those are the restaurants like Chipotle or Blaze Pizza and Pizza. There's different regional chains where you build your own. It's the assembly line format. And those choices, we can customize, you know, any number of bowls or sandwiches, but it feels less overwhelming because you kind of make the choices piece by piece. So, okay, I have to choose from five types of cheese, then I move on to the choosing of the bread. And that feels less daunting than choosing from, you know, imagine if there were 300 types of sandwiches listed, you would never know where to start. But the customization and the greater array of choices where you kind of help build your own, that's not going anywhere. And if anything, that's increasing.
Devoured, From Chicken Wings to Kale Smoothies, How What We Eat Defines Who We Are, the book by Sophie Egan. It's a mix of psychology, anthropology, food science, and a little behavioral economics in there, too. You can find it in bookstores, in libraries, and on our website, wvxu.org. Some information there. So, Sophie, I confess that you got in my head, you have me thinking, but what are you hoping that readers will get out of this? I mean, it was very eye-opening to look at how society, how work, how just typical behaviors influence how and what I eat. But what are you hoping that an average reader might take away from Devoured?
Well, definitely, as you said, to kind of get in their heads, but more from the standpoint of helping people look at their daily behaviors in a way they never have before. Things that we take as normal or just for granted, maybe we aren't even conscious of, things that you can start to become more aware. My hope is you can gain more control over your food choices. So at least you can start to know why you're making choices that you're making. And on the individual level, maybe that means you can start to find what works for you with cooking more or eating more whole real foods. On the cultural level, maybe we can start to make more time for office cultures with the norm of taking a lunch break, schools that maybe could allow more time for lunch and to bring food into the classroom to learn more about it. So my hope is that ultimately, armed with this bird's eye perspective on ourselves, we can start to be a little bit more in the driver's seat of our relationships with food in the United States.
I was fascinated by many different of the subjects that you cover in Devoured, and really interested in about everything you talk about in each chapter. But have there been things that people are picking out and focusing on, you know, that they are picking out of Devoured and that's really surprised them?
It's early on, but I would say that the two of the things that are really jumping out are how much work is affecting our eating, and that we really should start to take a closer look at just how much time we're spending working, and that lack of time is really a root cause of some of these food-related health problems. So instead of blaming ourselves for, you know, being lazy and nobody wants, you know, that's why we eat fast food, really looking at, well, what if we had ways to look more upstream and have more time to eat and to prepare food? So that's one of the things that's definitely really resonating with people, as is this realization that we really want to personalize and customize our food experiences as Americans, and that's not the norm around the world, and that a lot of us are kind of socially starving because of that American birthright to eat when and where you want. It means you're not eating as much with other people. So we're starting to sort of realize that Achilles heel and look for ways to gain the social connection through eating, whether that's through brunch or happy hour or maybe we can even resurrect the dying species known as the dinner party.
Well, Sophie, thank you for getting inside my head, and thank you for the book.
Thank you so much.
Sophie Egan, the book is Devoured, From Chicken Wings to Kale Smoothies, How What We Eat Defines Who We Are. And trust me, she will get in your head. She does quote Michael Pollan at one part, eat food, not too much, mostly plants. And to that, she adds her dozen words, work less and savor more, make it real, and stir the pot. The Book Club at 91.7.